your AI generation of minutes?
Oh yeah, it's a great app.
Is that best describe it?
Oh yeah, I used the trial version, and then liked it, so I bought it, you know, for $100 a year, and so I've used it a handful of times since then. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. If it's okay, right one.
Yes.
I go ahead and run the meeting. Okay, today is Tuesday, November 25th, 2025. This is the board meeting for the Sevier County Special Service District Number 2. Attending our board members, Greg Jensen, Jody Gale, and this is Malcolm Nash, who works as, the district manager or something along those lines. All right, so the meeting has been noticed. The first item are the minutes of the June meeting. Was the last time the board met. I'll hand those to you so you can peruse those. Again, I should have given this to you a week ago so you had a chance to move them, but I'll give you a second there to yes, yeah.
We've got a couple more to do.
Yeah, we've got some more. I'll give you an update of those as we move through. And I've been keeping notes of my activities from these trade shows these past year. So in December, I'll bring those to you and just let you know what happened and kind of what the results were and plans for the coming year.
You look good, all the movie except.
And I will say.
Okay, move a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, next item is third quarter. So this is the report here, the summary report of the third quarter. So our budget, the first column is the budget for 2025. So you have what we're looking at for the entire year. The third quarter actual, again, this is something I should have had to you sooner. I get so busy that I lose track of it. So for the third quarter, that was the activity. That's third quarter is when the money actually comes in for the district. So we had $49,000 in mineral lease. So it's the highest year that we've had. Interest income has dropped quite a bit, because the interest rates have dropped, and then just other miscellaneous things for $59 there. And then expenses down on the bottom part of the sheet.
Why was the income up this year?
It all goes to the formula on coal mining on state trust lands. On the expenses down there below, there's the summary, and then this report is the detailed transactions. For the quarter. And then the third column there is the year to date for the district. And then of course the last column is the quarter, which is actually the difference is a year to date. Not for the quarter, I should relabel that. Year-to-date difference on that last column. It really should be titled year-to-date difference.
Okay. So it looks like we're over budget.
Yep, so next month when we have our board meeting to approve the 2026 budget, we'll also have a public meeting to open the 2025 budget to make some adjustments so we don't go over budget for the end of the year. There's the third quarter. If you would like to go through the itemized categories for the last quarter, we can give you a second to go through that, and if you have any questions.
For the Fabtech Trade Show Hotel Marriott, was that in D.C. or?
These were all in Chicago. These are huge trade shows. And so Chicago is about one of the only cities in the country that can handle the. Some of these are 50,000 attendees.
Oh, man.
And they'll have a couple thousand or 2,500 exhibitors. And so it takes a couple of days to actually just walk through and visit with as many as I can, or the ones that make the most sense. Chicago is an expensive place to stay.
To wander.
Yes. I mean, the hotels are just expensive per night. They're $500 a night.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Usually I'm able to arrive on a Sunday, stay Monday and Tuesday, or Sunday, Monday, either fly out on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So it's try and keep it as minimal as I can. Let me put it this way. I'm not there for the entire length of the trade show.
Yeah.
The exhibit halls are usually just open like maybe 2 or 2.5 days, and that's when I'm there.
How have you felt? Like, have they paid off? Because we gave that one guy, you know, a significant amount of money to participate in these trade shows. They don't hurt, but have we gone ahead?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's the right question to ask. And that little report I've got that I've kept notes on might be the best way to answer it. I'd call it a learning year, learning how to pitch the county, mm-hmm. what kind of companies to talk to. There were a few requests for information after I got back, and I responded to those. There's one guy that we met there at the booth. It was he just happened to be walking by, and from Guatemala, and one of the people from GSLI, one of their staff people, is from Central America. So she picked up on it immediately and started a conversation with him. He runs a company, fairly good-sized company there in Guatemala, but he's building a home in Park City and wants to begin part of his operation in Utah. So I was called on the phone and said, hey, are you still in the building? I said, yeah. And so I ran down there and met with him. And he said, this is what I'm interested in doing. And I says, okay, I can help you navigate the Utah offices. I know who you need to talk to.
Yeah.
He's not going to come here. And I said, yeah, I said, you won't be coming to my county. I says, but putting on my my Utah hat, I'm going to help you have a good experience in the state. And so probably half dozen phone calls with the guy, did some introductions with him and some people at the World Trade Center, the governor's office, economic opportunity. My counterpart at Summit County, Jeff Jones is his name. So I says, all right, these for your question, this is who you need to talk to. And then he's kind of off doing his thing. But
he must be doing well if he's building a home for
us. Yeah, he's doing okay. Yeah, yeah, he's so he's doing well that way. But anyway, so let me give that the short answer, but I'll give you a little bit more as we move on. But anyway, that's the third quarter. And then for your information, let me just give you this one. These are the expenditures, the transactions year to date. So this gives all the items there. Yeah, there we go. All right.
On the Richfield Chamber, I know the county does the, you know, you always, you know, have us, you know, so we can go.
Yeah.
And I show that you are paying. Are you not included with the the commissioners on that thing?
Well, yeah, the county is the District 2 pays for the county membership.
Okay.
The commissioner budget doesn't cover.
Okay.
The chamber
membership. That right. 17. I was just making sure that if we needed to, let's have you included on those lunches. We're not doubling.
Yeah, and I am for 2026. Kenzie recommended that we change it from an individual membership to a business membership that includes the luncheons.
Okay.
So we're not getting that $17 fee every month. And,
okay.
Mallory.
I'm trying to get to those, but I just had.
Sometimes the schedules just don't allow it. Yeah.
I wanted to go Monday for their annual dinner a week ago today.
Their annual dinner was actually the 17th.
Yeah.
And I ended up being Aurora City Council meeting to explain the Redmond Minerals property tax item. So I missed it.
Well, I had a different excuse. It was my birthday. I'm like, you know,
I'll take you up on that.
I'm like, I need a day for myself today.
So. Yeah. No, that's good.
I will mess up, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Yeah, just in a nutshell on your question, Jody, is in 2022, Redmond Minerals, through an error on their part, they overpaid their property taxes. And so we're going through the process to make them whole. It's not a refund necessarily, but it's a way to make them whole. And it involves the county, the school district, and Aurora City, because part of the properties they pay is in Aurora City. So Commissioner Johnson and I were there explaining to him what the situation is. Last night, we were at their city council meeting again last night with Rusty Bastian was there at this time.
Okay.
And he explained to him what happened. And so they...
How did they take it?
They were fine with it. They actually had more questions. Why didn't we hear about this sooner? And so I gave him an answer without throwing Rusty under the bus. After the meeting, I threw Rusty under the bus and said, the commissioners...
With you and him?
Rusty wasn't there. Me and one of the council members.
Okay.
And so the commissioners asked him 18 months ago to meet with you guys and explain to you what happened, and Rusty didn't. And he says, okay. But but they were fine with it, and they're going to act on it and okay. make him whole. And so it was okay. But so, yeah, anyway.
How's the mayor? Did they give an update on the new mayor's break?
He was there.
Are you serious?
If I remember. Yeah, Scott said end of last week that his condition isn't quite as bad as maybe initially reported or understood.
He might be on a heart transplant list.
I think that's off.
Okay.
If I'm remembering what Scott mentioned.
The new mayor just got elected on that Tuesday, and then we met Monday for our COG at R6, you know, so 6 days after he won the election, and within 2 or 3 days, he had an extremely massive, scary heart attack.
Something like that, yeah. It was... But apparently he's going to be okay. So the next item on the agenda is the tentative budget. And the tentative budget is two parts. One is the general fund. The other is the capital projects fund. So on the first one, on the general fund, we've got the first column is actual of 2024. And so that's what actually happened in 2024. And then 2025 year to date. And then the proposed, the tentative budget for 2026. And so the revenues for 2026, I've got roughly $45,000 for revenues, $500,000 for interest. Interest rates have dropped quite a bit, so there's not as much revenue coming in there. Other is just $250,000. And then we'll need a contribution from the fund balance to balance the budget of $21,250. So the expenses down there you can see listed out. Um, the professional services, the big item there, that's where we pay for Mallory's time. The travel I bumped up from previous budget years. The previous years, I think, was $12,000. I bumped it up to $15,000. With these trade shows, there's more travel expenses. For this year, to offset some of those additional travel expenses, there's a number of things I usually go to in the fall or that I've gone to in the past that I did not go to this year, which was fine. And so try and keeping the numbers down a little bit. But travel is definitely higher than previous years because of the trade shows.
Well, as I've said before, I have personally experienced the value of trade shows and the benefits that come from them. I look at them as more of an investment than an expense.
Yeah.
As long as we're getting something out of it.
Right.
And sometimes it takes a few years to get momentum going and through participation. As long as we're getting something worthwhile from those.
Yeah, and the GSLI folks and their software platform, they actually have a way for me to track my activities and produce for a board kind of a return on investment report. So I'll do that for next month. It's good for me to do it. The other budget item, I think I got this too, is it's the tentative?
Yes, it's there.
Okay. It's there. Yeah, this is the Capital Projects Fund. We have basically a balance of $201,000 in there, and there's no proposed changes for that. The Capital Projects Fund. So on that, we'll before the end of the meeting, we'll schedule the December board meeting with a public hearing to adopt the budget. Actually, that's the next item on the agenda. So if you would look at your calendars, and usually Tuesdays work best.
Well, we're thinking of
the 16th.
If that works.
I don't think we want to do it the 23rd.
No. 16th works for me.
Okay.
And please send me the calendar invite.
Yep.
Because I missed that this morning. Every night I look at my phone and I missed it with what I have to do in the morning.
Yeah.
And I was sitting down in my office chair and all of a sudden the invite popped up and I'm like,
oh.
Glad I live 10 minutes away.
Yeah. I'll do that. I'll make a note to myself to send you a note, the week before. Well, I'll get it on the calendar now, but then I'll shoot you a note, just a reminder, the day before, a couple of days before, to do it that way.
You do the public notice.
Yep, I do the public notice. I'm supposed to do a published notice, I think, as well. And, of course, the Ritual Leaper is now not so much a newspaper as it is a flyer.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Not lately. I haven't even bothered looking.
It's not a newspaper. It's an 8.5, slightly larger than 8.5 by 11 paper stapled together or folded.
That's too bad.
Yeah, we're experiencing what thousands of other communities across the country have, and that's just the loss of community newspaper.
Yeah.
Facebook is the biggest thing. The next item on the agenda. The next item is what's called the fraud risk assessment. We have to do this every year. And so this is where we go through and look at the board's operations and are we at risk for fraud and abuse of district resources. So the first sheet there, sheet number two, is a question on basic separation of duties. In our district, we do have a board chair, a clerk, and a treasurer. Kinley's the clerk. I think we have Jody as the treasurer. And then Greg is the clerk. We maybe need to reaffirm that at the next board meeting. So we do have the three titles. Are all three people who are able to receive cash or check payments different from all those who are able to make general ledger entries? The answer is no. But we have what they call MC, mitigating control, down at the bottom there, you see. So a number of situations we have, because we're such a small district, don't have a staff of people, the potential for risk is high, or the risk for fraud is high. So what we do is mitigate those risks by doing the following things. For example, every month I give to Steve a copy of the reconciled bank statements so that he's reviewing receipts, credit card purchases, checks that have been written, and, you know, our signatures there. Is it a legitimate purchase of the district? He doesn't check budget things. That's a board thing. But he is checking to see if there are legitimate uses of district money.
So the hunt, their bullets don't go through.
Yeah, right, right, right. You know. So if you look at, you know, item number two, we have mitigating controls. Item three, for customer accounts. In this case, it's not applicable because we don't have customers. We're not a water district or a sewer district. Okay. Item four, do people have access to blank checks different from those who authorize signers? Again, no, but we have mitigating controls in that we have two people sign each check. Item five, does someone other than the clerk or treasurer reconcile bank accounts or are original bank statements reviewed by a person other than the clerk? In this case, yes, we do that. Again, with Steve. Item six, the same thing. We do that. We have Steve review those monthly. Item seven, are statements received directly from the card company by someone other than the cardholder? No, I receive the statements, but we can have Steve look at it, so that's our mitigating control. Item eight, yes, someone other than the cardholder reviews the transactions. Let's see. Item nine, does someone who is not a subordinate credit card purchase holder review all card purchases? Yes, Steve does that again. Steve is not a subordinate to me, for example. You know, one time the state auditors told the story of a woman who was stealing money by creating false credit card statements, and one morning she left it on the copier. And that's how they caught her. Another guy looked at saw the sheet on the glass. Copper says, well, what's this? And that's how they caught her. And so that's why they want to know, are original credit card statements being seen by somebody other than the person who has the card?
And they finally were.
Yeah. So these stories. Item 11, we don't have payroll, so that's not applicable. And then item 12 is not applicable. So if you go to the next sheet.
Was Mallory not considered payroll? Because
she's an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have an agreement, formal agreement with her to make those arrangements. The fraud risk assessment, this is where we score ourselves. At the bottom of that column, I should put the number 205. That's what our score is. So as you go to our score is 205. As you look at the top there and that, there's the point for this space for the point number. We are in the high category. So again, the state auditor requires us to go through this exercise every year so that the board is aware of our status, that we are a high risk entity. And so, again, this is where we have mitigating controls to manage that.
Yeah, Steve looking out after.
Oh. Yeah, Steve's looking over our shoulders, particularly mine, so that we don't run into problems.
So we don't have a copier.
Right, we don't have a copier experience.
No, we don't want to put you in difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some people may say, well, I'm an honest person, I don't steal money, and so I'm offended by doing these types of things, and, you know, the attitude really should be, I welcome these kinds of things because then it protects me as well from making those statements. So in the spirit of full disclosure, last month I purchased some gas and I grabbed the wrong credit card in my wallet. I grabbed the district card to make the gas purchase. And in reconciling my personal accounts, I went, oh, I used the wrong card. So I reimbursed the district. Excuse me, and made a note of it in the credit card statement and told Steve, I said, this is what I did. This is how it was corrected. And he said, okay. He initialed the statement saying that he'd reviewed it and it was disclosed to him. The state lawmakers, what is it, half dozen years ago, 7-8 years ago, turned that into a felony. I'd be serious. They got so mad at these stories coming out from across the state that they really got hard on it and said, hey, you're don't do this or you're in big trouble. So anyway, it was disclosed. Next item, here we go, is review the fraud risk assessment form, conflicts of interest statements. Have we had you sign these yet this year?
Conflict of interest? I do not recall.
And I don't, I checked the file. I didn't see it, so this is what some, again, something we do every year. This is to, this is to say, you know, do you have a conflict of interest? Do you have a relationship with any entity that would present a problem with operations of the district?
I signed on the wrong one. I did the district board, not the appointed board member.
Oh, you're fine. Yeah, you're right. Just go ahead and make the... Just go ahead and make the correction, then initial it, and then we're good.
Do that right.
Yep, okay, we're good there. The other item is district policies. We have not made any changes to the policies, and so there's no reason to. But I can get you a copy of them if you'd like to see those, but we have not made any changes this year in district policies. Those district policies include handling cash. You know, when we get cash, it has to be deposited within 3 days. Use of district equipment, purchasing policies, those types of things. So, item 8, reviewing pending economic development projects. Yeah, so let me kind of go back to the trade show things. For next year, there is a trade show in Salt Lake for the mining industry. It's their national trade show. It's called SME Exchange or SME Mine Exchange. And how I found out about it is I went on to my artificial intelligence account. I use a ChatGPT. Cost $20 a month. And the idea came from the GSLI people. I put in a prompt saying, do an economic review and analysis of Sevier County. You know, what's our county gross domestic product? What are the major industries in Sevier County? And what trade shows are in 2026 that would fit our economy? And so it came back with a list of about 6 or 8 different trade shows that say, if you're going there to do recruiting efforts, these are the trade shows I'd recommend. And this first one was in this one in February, this mining trade show. And so I've registered. They have a pass category for just if you want to just visit the exhibit hall, the exhibitors for 2 days. It's $500. And so I've signed up for it. And so I'll go to Salt Lake in February for a couple of days and visit with companies and say, we have.
What days of the week is that?
I think it's a Tuesday, Wednesday.
Because I would be up there the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for legislative stuff.
Yeah.
And so if there's some way that I could maybe piggyback on.
Yeah, we can get you registered for a day. It's like $200.
You know, maybe that's something that I ought
to. Oh, no, it'd be a good experience. Then you can see what I'm doing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll get you set up.
Okay.
I'll confirm the dates so you can visit a trade show and talk to people. You know, so the pitch there will be, you know, I'm in Utah. Utah's largest coal mine is here. We have a bunch of support businesses in our county. Have you considered looking at Utah or adding, you know, an operation in the state or in Sevier County? Would you look at our county as a way to begin doing something type of things? You know, it's a sales pitch for the Saline Industrial Park or the Richfield in some cases type of thing. So it's, you know, it's a trade show that fits our area. And then we have, you know, I'll visit a handful more next year. There's one in California that deals with fabrication, metal fabrication things. So we'll hit that. This is where the GSLI membership comes into play, where they say, all right, these are the ones we'd recommend you go to and that they attend as well.
Malcolm, a question. Years ago, when we were working intently on the railroad project, there was a a national conference, and I'm trying to remember what it was called, RTIF or something like that, that it was a railroad-related trade show. Some type of a national trade show. I've forgotten the details about it, but that kind of came to mind as we've been talking this morning, and then as a result of the discussion at the AOG meeting, or R6 meeting. where it's been this many years since we actively worked on the rail project, and with the renewed discussion that the Supreme Court decision is made on the rail project in the Middle Basin.
Right.
It's that's partially, I think, what prompted the discussion at R6. And Commissioner Jessen, I'd be interested in your impression of that discussion on where we may go. I guess, Malcolm, you and I are the only ones left that was really involved in the work on that project when it was done.
As far as my meeting with the Seven County Infrastructure Coalition, which is now, we're just naming it the Infrastructure Coalition because we were able to add Sudampe County.
Okay.
There was some trepidation with them, and I met that morning with all three Sampe County commissioners, Travis, myself, and Keith Heaton, the director. Mm-hmm. And we worked through a lot of stuff, and Scott Bartholomew was finally able to, they've had a water issue with carbon.
Right,
it's been a fight, you know, and so anyway, we got past that. It's just really been, I felt like the USAC conference, the same thing with the two things. I kept getting thrown in the middle, I think we've negotiated very well. And, you know, to have Scott Bartholomew go to Carbon County at the last Seven County meeting and say, okay, now we're at the just an infrastructure coalition, and have everybody accept him, and he wanted to come. And then we, but anyway, those things have worked out in the positive. But where I was headed was, over the last 18 months, that coalition really wants to do a project in Sevier County. They, you know, and since we won that thing, the Supreme Court, that decision, it just keeps the railroad keeps popping up and popping up and popping up. And Keith Heaton, I don't know if you remember, he was the one that actually brought it up, kind of started in that.
I don't know Keith personally. I know who he is, and I've kind of been around him.
Anyway, so he's taken that lead as far as, because we've directed him, and Brian Barton with Jones and DeMille has done the same thing. But Malcolm mentioned yesterday he'd met with someone, and I'm like, you need to meet with Jody, because this is something it keeps popping up, and so my thing is, anytime we receive some from the state, is the rail available? And they always put no, and you know, they go somewhere else. And I think there's ways to fill, I don't know how many cars they would need a day, when they're we figure out a way to get salt on it here, ag on it here, coal, I mean, so that we have different things on it. But anyway, to me, it feels like that's the right thing, the right direction that we need to go on.
Well, the original $50 million that was set aside, that eventually ended up in the hands of the Seven County Coalition. Now, the coalition was specifically for the Central Utah Rail Project and its relationship with the port in Oakland. Also in the meeting, Malcolm, they reported that the port in Oakland is not dead.
That was part of our discussion at USAC. It's not only not dead. It's a go.
Yeah.
And so we're working on.
And this relates to that article that I read, brought to you. I guess it's been about a year ago, which kind of surprised me that it was in the paper down there.
Yeah, so if Oakland is back in the game, I mean actively, and it's really real, that could change the variables for this proposal here. So it's how does The question is, how does coal get from SUFCO or Central Utah to Oakland? I mean, what's the path? Is it through Wellington still? Or is it, are we going to see trucks coming back down the canyon and headed out to Levan?
Yeah.
That's the question for us. And if that happens and we're back to X million of tons of coal every year going to the west, then it's time to dust off the permit and take a look at it.
Yep.
So Tudor brought in last week a guy by the name of Mark Hemphill. And Mark had worked with Six County AOG a few years back about looking at this railroad again. So when Tudor brought this guy in, I had Travis come in. And Travis, you know, remembered the guy. Yeah, he absolutely remembered the guy. So this Mark Hemphill is with a short line operator out of Fort Worth, Texas. And he says, yeah, we're interested in the project. He said, what we're interested in is getting an exclusive with R6 to basically hold the permit so that it gives them time to look at it. And if it becomes feasible, then it's theirs. You know, so that's a board discussion for R6. I'm sure Travis will bring up to the R6 board and say, are you comfortable doing that, signing an exclusive contract with this company? And, you know, give him a chance to and an incentive to look at this rail line and see if it would work. You know, so that's probably something that your board will be hitting up, Greg.
So a year ago at the summit, I went to the session that was sponsored by Patriot Rail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to get my notes out to remember all the details. It's been a while, but they were unaware of the Central Utah Short Line Railroad project. We had quite a discussion. They were not a booth or a presenter this year, but they were there at the summit.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, every year, there's a trade association convention for what do they call it? The American Short Line Railroad Association. There's also, I think, a big railroad, you know, for all the big carriers as well, the class ones. But there's one specifically for short line operators. And so if this does play out, it may be worth attending that conference or convention with flyers in hand saying, all right, this is who we are. Would you be interested in looking at us? And so that's why this Mark Kemphill's group, Rio Grande, is who they are. You know, that's they would be a part of that short line group, trade group.
So I have a proposal, maybe it shouldn't be a proposal yet, but I have a question. We used to, and I'm forgetting the guy who did the feasibility study.
Gary Hunter.
It's been a long time since we had Gary.
Yeah, he and I can actually keep in touch.
Is it time to either have Gary or someone like Gary relook at the economic feasibility of the rail project?
I think the answer is yes, but I'm not sure when. You know, this Mark Kemphill's group, this Rio Grande group, they may do it.
Would it hurt to have both of them do it?
Yeah,
because Gary's independent.
Yeah, Gary's independent. I sent Mark Kemphill Gary's last report. He did an update back in 2017. He updated his previous studies to Gary. So I said that to him. I said, this is what the numbers were then. I agree with you. I think the answer is yes. It's just who would do it, when, who pays for it.
When we had Gary do those, do you remember approximately what it was costing us to have him do the full update?
Oh, it was like $10,000-$12,000. It wasn't too crazy.
Oh, okay.
So we could afford to do that through the special service district.
Yeah. Really, it's going to land back in the board of the R6. This is right. Where it's...
It's their permit.
What happens next is going to be decided there.
Yeah, the R6 was the applicant to the Surface Transportation Board when all of that was done. And there was some discussion later on where the other counties, it was kind of Sevier, Juab, San Pete, and then kind of Millard, Paiute, and Wayne. Millard could still benefit it, but the others kind of says, well, let's let the other three counties primarily take the lead. But the work was done in the name of the AOG. And now we've got a different name, and that'd have to be adjusted. But anyway, I just wanted to, you know, while we were talking about projects, kind of revisit a little bit. And if there was, RTIF was a federal funding source, and I remember hearing you talk about it.
Yep.
If we could get federal funding plus to go along with short line rail funding, if the economics worked, et cetera, it'd be kind of fun to relook at everything to see if anything different. I'm not optimistic it has.
Yeah.
You look at the cost of construction, the last number we had, it was north of 125 or 124
million. But that's been 10 years at least.
That's been 10 years ago, and the cost of materials has doubled or tripled in some cases.
Yeah.
But it would be good, I think, to have a fresh economic look at it.
Yeah. It's all freight. Yeah, still the question is freight.
We've got oil, which we really didn't have much of in the original scenario. And whether they could freight that oil cheaper to the refineries or not, that would be interesting to see that crank.
All right. So anyway, Oakland may kind of breathe some life back into this. Another update for you, Jody, primarily, is the company that's going to build a battery storage facility. They're going to start construction first of next year.
Cool.
Just south across the street from the substation. They leased 100 acres from the Sorensen family. And so their footprint's going to be
directly east of the corner of all the main electrical panel for the on the solar farm, just right in that very corner.
Okay.
Yeah. So
this is right across the street from Fulmer's yards, then, right?
Where their big collection pit is, kitty cornered from the big biggest lagoon. Well, I guess they have some lagoons on the other side, but yeah.
Now that's to contain the runoff from the creels. So.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, well, that's good news. How much are they going to invest?
It'll be around $60 million will be the value.
Cool.
Again, small footprint, but the value of these batteries is so high that it's going to actually generate a pretty good amount of personal property tax. So.
Number of jobs?
No, just one maybe. It's like solar farms. You have a guy come in once in a while, check on them, see if they're still working. Very low profile, small footprint. People won't even know what they are. You know, they're just inside containers, basically.
Cool.
Yeah, so
very good.
Good to see that happen. Just a reminder on online training. I think you guys are good for your training. So I don't think there's any default there. Again, we'll hold a public hearing next month to amend the 2025 budget to take care of that overage. I'll get those notices taken care of, and that's it.
Back to economic things.
Yes.
I just wanted to bring up a couple things. Jody, are you aware of Industrial Injection, and they bought the big building behind Ace Hardware?
No. Well, yes, to some degree. Malcolm gave me an update a while back.
So they have bought the building. They will have operations running before Christmas Day. Workers in there.
Wow.
When you and I were at there, remember the board showed 23rd of December.
Okay.
They will have equipment in there, people there. So they're making a footprint. They were also able to not only buy the building, they bought the adjacent, was it 8 to 10 acres?
Yeah,
directly south.
For expansion.
And, for expansion for there. So that just is it would be something where I'm guessing in the neighborhood a potential, 120 employees full time. And these are, decent, really, really good type of things. And then Mayor Seeley and Brent Bosworth and I, we've joked, but we've done it in jest a little bit, but there's a young man, Travis Warwood,
name.
That runs the Bar W kind of thing.
Right.
And I've told him I'll find him a house. He can come to Ridgefield and there's a second operation here in town. And they we've laughed, but I've said it enough that I think they're actually thinking about it.
Yeah,
and I'll keep working on him.
I know him. I've worked with him on the project up there.
So
he's
anyway,
a good man.
Just as a, we'll just keep firing away at him. My honest opinion, no matter what Henry wants to do, if he's involved, there's not going to be a single person in the state that wants to participate as a partner with him. This, I don't know. That's,
I don't disagree.
That can,
you know, we can adjourn the meeting.
Okay, we're adjourned. But.